get out. Don't do it.
That was the Kaboomers from Preschool Songs for Children, the Little Skunk Song. And over the break, you heard the Skunk Says Funk in the background. Before that, What's Not to Love About a Skunk is Joe McDermott from his CD called I Am a Baby. Today on the Children's Hour, we're learning all about skunks from Dr. Jerry Dragoo. He's the founder and head of the Dragoo Institute for the Betterment of Skunks and Skunk Reputations. And we still have a lot more questions for you, Dr. Dragoo.
How do skunks spray?
All clovers have these anal scent glands. And basically what it is, it's a smooth muscle that's wrapped around the little gland. And it's connected directly to the brain by the nervous system. And so all they got to do is think about it. And it just kind of squeezes that gland right at the base of the tail. And skunks are different from other animals like dogs and cats and otters. Well, they have the scent gland just kind of leaks out into the base of the tail, and they just kind of, you know, rub their butts on the ground and everything to leave their scent. But skunks actually have a nipple associated with it, or a papillae that is at the end of that gland. And so when they will evert the rectum, and that nipple just sticks out, and they can direct their spray with those nipples.
Do they try to direct their spray? Like if I were to be sprayed by a skunk, would it be aiming for something at me?
Your face. It's going for your eyes, your nose, your face. And their aim is pretty good. And they have a couple of different methods. One of them is if I'm a predator chasing after a skunk and he can't really see me and I'm running after it, he's going to start running away and he's just going to release it as a cloud. So it's going to be kind of atomized, these little bitty droplets, and it just kind of poof goes out. And the predator has to actually run through that. And so that way it doesn't matter where the predator is at. If you can't see him directly, he's going to run through that cloud because it's going to cover a wider area. If you get him cornered, and he will generally face you with both directions. He'll turn into a U-shape, and you'll see his face and his rear end. And that's when it comes out as a stream. And that usually is aimed right for the face.
How do you get rid of the smell?
I usually just take a shower.
Does that work?
No. there's a recipe out there. It's a hydrogen peroxide, baking soda, and shampoo. And you can use that on your pets as well. You just want to make sure you don't get anywhere near the eyes because the hydrogen peroxide will mess with you. And what that does is it kind of neutralizes the sulfur compound. And then the shampoo washes the oily part away.
Why do skunks smell when they're dead? Because one time at my school, there was a dead skunk, and it, like, smelled at my school for, like, days.
Those scent glands are still there, and it's just a big old sack. It's about the size of a walnut, maybe. And so all of that liquid is still in that gland. When they spray, it's just a very small amount. And so the animal dies, the gland is still there. And so as the animal starts to decay, it will have the dead animal smell. But once the muscle and all that stuff breaks down around the gland, all that liquid just spews out.
Why do skunks have a black and white coloration?
It's a warning. Basically, the black and white, it's easy to see. Most animals can distinguish between the black and white. They see that, and they say, that's something I need to be aware of. I need to be cautious around this animal. And so they rely so heavily on their scent gland to protect them, they use this color pattern to say, hey, if you come after me, I'm going to spray you. And so other predators will recognize that color pattern as something to stay away from.
Why do you work with skunks?
Well, when I first started working with them, they were in the weasel family, and not exactly the weasel I was thinking of, but once the first one sprayed me, I started working with them, and I realized that they were really different than other animals. And as I started working with them, people would find them as babies and say, I've got this baby skunk, what do I do with it? And so they would come to me because I was studying them. I didn't know how to take care of them, but they would bring them to me. And fortunately, my wife is a registered veterinary technician, and so she knows how to take care of little things. And so she would help me, and we started raising these babies, and then we would release them into the wild when they were old enough. And so then it just kind of happened I was doing that. I could still do my research for doing the genetic stuff, but I was also learning a lot about behavior by taking care of these young animals. And we raise them up and we get them, prepare them for being outdoors. We prepare them for being in the wild. They're really fun to work with.
Did you like cuddle them and stuff? They seem so cute and soft.
They are adorable. It depends on what age we get them at. If we get them at the age where they already have teeth and they're able to walk around, we try really, really hard not to interact with them that much. And so we'll make sure they get food and water, and we will check them for to make sure that they're healthy, make sure there's no wounds on them or anything like that. And then about the only time they really see us is when we're feeding them. And I also set up game cameras so that I can go out the next day and make sure that I still have the same number of animals I was supposed to have. However, when they come to us really small, if their eyes aren't open, they don't have teeth yet, we have to bottle feed them. And when you do that, you have no choice, but you have to cuddle them. You have to hold them, interact with them. And those are the harder ones to release, because once we get them to the age where they have teeth and can walk around on their own, we'll put them outside in an enclosed area and try to wean ourselves from them so that they can be prepared to go back into the wild. But yeah, you can't help but cuddle the little ones.
We have posted pictures of baby skunks at childrenshour.org. Look for the skunk episode, and there's a lot of links and information in there. But this is the sound that a baby skunk makes. Wouldn't want to cuddle such a cute little thing. Aw. Yeah, Lucy.
I've always wanted a pet skunk.
Yeah, me too, Lucy. Is it cruel to take skunks out of the wild, Dr. Dragoo, and keep them as pets?
Skunks are highly adaptable. I think they will learn to live in any environment that they're put in, which makes it really easy to do rehabilitation, because I can take a skunk from one area and put it somewhere else and have a good chance of surviving, because they don't have to worry about a lot of competition with other members of the species. And I tell people this, it's not just skunks, but it's pretty much any animal. What makes a good pet is not the animal. It's a good pet caretaker. So if you're going to keep an animal, any species, if it's a dog or a cat, skunks, you need to understand that animal and know what it needs in order for it to survive. Know what it eats. Know what its behaviors are. I had one person contact me and said, how do I keep my skunk from digging up my carpet? My solution was to remove the carpet, because skunks dig. That's part of their behavior. And if you don't understand that, you shouldn't be having a pet skunk.
We are talking with Dr. Jerry Dragoo. He is a mephitologist, which is a skunk scientist at the Dragoo Institute for the Betterment of Skunks and Skunk Reputations.
Do skunks hibernate during the winter?
No, they don't do true hibernation. The way I understand hibernation is your body temperature lowers down to just a few degrees above what the outside temperature is. But skunks don't actually do that. They will go into a torpor, especially up north.
Remind us what torpor is, Dr. Dragoo?
Torpor, okay. Basically, they just slow down. Their metabolism does slow down when they go into torpor, and they can sleep for up to, you know, 2.5 weeks or so without having to worry about getting up and eating or drinking anything. But it's not really true hibernation. They can wake up instantly if they have to. But that's up in the northern part when it gets really, really cold. When you get down here into the desert southwest, skunks in some states will actually be more active in the wintertime than they are in the summer, because it's the conditions are a little bit easier for them.
What does a skunk's house look like?
It depends on where they make it. Some skunks will dig a hole and live under that, or they'll crawl under a shed, live under that. It could be wide open. It could be confined. A lot of times they will take over the den of another animal. So if a squirrel dug a hole, they may widen it up a little bit and make a little area that could have a food cache or a toilet area. It's highly variable.
So they're tidy like that? They have an area where they use the bathroom?
Some of them do. Some of them don't. It's just, when you're trying to raise them, it's better if they would go away from where they're sleeping. But not all of them do. And a lot of times, I get people that say, I can smell a skunk. I smell him every day at 2:30 right here. And that if you crawl underneath the house, you can see there is a toilet area. And every day at 2 o'clock or something, they get up, use the bathroom, and go to bed. And of course, those nipples that what they use for spray is right there at their rear end. And when they have to go to the bathroom, it passes right by that. And so it'll pick up a little bit of that scent.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Dragoo, the founder and director of the Dragoo Institute for the Betterment of Skunks and Skunk Reputations. And we have a few more questions for Dr. Dragoo, but first, this is Beth Jean.
Stinker never, ever felt like a innocent punk. Blop into the ground he went kerplunk. Cause he was really in a funk, being a skunk that never stunk. Not a spritz, a spurt, or squirt. He always smelled like sweet dessert. He was dry as the Mojave Desert. Tinker hid in the dirt, became a squirt introvert. He couldn't do. Trash bin filled up to the brim. Then came along a strong swoosh of wind. Taking a whiff and a sniff, he sat there imagining that that awful air came right out of his derriere. He said, being fresh just isn't fair.
Being fresh just isn't fair.
And he sang this song as he shed a little tear.
Like
This is the Children's Hour. That was Beth Jean from a self-titled CD. And we're talking with Dr. Jerry Dragoo, the mephitologist behind the Dragoo Institute for the Betterment of Skunks and Skunk Reputations. We've posted a lot of curriculum on our website. Just look for the skunk episode. We just have time for a few more questions for Dr. Dragoo. And then we've got a story from Bill Harley. Cade, you have the next question.
What is your favorite species of skunk and why?
The species that I started working with, when I first started, I was told that there was a difference. We were trying to find out if there's a difference between the eastern spotted skunk and the western spotted skunk. And so that's what I got started on. But when I was working on my PhD, I actually started working with the hognose skunks. And those I find very fascinating. They got a long naked nose patch and they're very muscular. They're more like badgers. In fact, I think one of the common names is badger skunk. They're diggers, they can climb. They don't climb like spotted skunks can climb up and down trees, kind of squirrel-like. Whereas a hognose skunk can climb up something, but it usually climbs down like a brick. So it, when it comes down, it usually falls. And we had two of them that were born in the back of my truck. And so I kind of kept them for a long time. And one of them climbed up onto the couch, got up on top of our fish tank, and dove into the fish tank. We had to fish him out of there, and that was fun. But the spotted skunks are pretty cute, and they're the ones that do the handstand.
Wait, handstands?
Spotted skunks, one of their natural defenses is to threaten before they spray. And so they can get up on their front feet. And so they'll actually stand on the front feet, and it kind of makes them look bigger. If you're a predator walking up and all of a sudden you see this, and if you look at them, they've got a couple of white spots on their rear end. And if you just get a sudden flash, you might look at that as an eye spot or something. And so it makes the animal, it looks like this, okay, there's a big head here, now I'm going to back off. But of course, it's also warning with the black and white coloring. He's like, hey, I'm a skunk, I'm going to spray you. And here, let me show you I'm a skunk. And usually if they're doing a handstand, you don't have to worry about them spraying you. They'll usually drop down and face you with both ends to spray you. Early on when I started, we have a database where I enter literature, and my wife was helping me. She's reading through this one article and said that spotted skunks could hold that handstand for up to 5 seconds.
What?
And we just started laughing because we had one that would come out from underneath our couch, go up onto its front feet, and walk around. It would chase the cat, jumped up on a TV stand, walked around, jumped off the TV stand, ran back, and dove under the couch again, all on its front feet.
I don't know which part of the story I like best. Is it the handstand? Is it the chasing of the cat? Or is it just the fact that you have a skunk in your house at all? We're talking with Dr. Jerry Dragoo. Yeah, Zen.
For all the good that they do in their natural habitat, is there any use for us humans to keep them around? Or should you try and get rid of them?
Skunks do eat a lot of pest insects. So if you have a garden, they're going after the pests. In New York State, around 1914 or so, people who were growing hops wanted the state legislature to pass a law saying that it was illegal to trap skunks. And the reason being was they were the only natural predator of a hop borer beetle. The animal that was destroying the crops, was the only thing that would get rid of it was these skunks. And so they wanted to actually protect the skunks for that reason. So they do take a lot of, and they'll go after rodents, which can be pests. So they will eat a lot of other pests. My recommendation, and I do this, I try to deal with this with a lot of other species. I try to get people to learn how to live with the animal, understand it better. They can be very entertaining to watch if you have them in your backyard. If you do have a dog, you can have, you know, don't feed your dog at night because that's more likely when the skunk is out. If you want to get rid of them, the best thing to do is try to exclude them. If there's a skunk living under your shed, then try to make sure that the skunk is out and then block off the hole at that point. And that forces the skunk to move on its own. If worse comes to worse, there are some people that will trap these things and help you relocate them.
There's a lot more to learn about skunks. We've posted a lot of links at childrenshour.org. Dr. Jerry Dragoo, who is a mephitologist and the director and founder of the Dragoo Institute for the Betterment of Skunks and Skunk Reputations, thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour today.
Thank you.
You're all very welcome. This has been a lot of fun for me.
Coming up on the Children's Hour, we've got a story by Bill Harley and a book review about a book that features a character that is our guest, Dr. Jerry Dragoo. In the background, the Brecker Brothers from Collection Volume 1, Skunk Funk.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting the Children's Hour. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. Keep up with the Children's Hour and sign up for our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org.